Excision number 11938, reel 51.
Mr. G. Eyston, reel 51. Can you tell me, Mr. Eyston, your memories of the run into the coast and the actual landing?
Yeah, well, just before that, I'd like to go back to the situation that we finish up as a convoy with admirals, corps commanders and everybody on board, and we finish up 5 miles short of our starting off place. It's like being 5 miles behind your starting line for a battle. I just can't get why. I've already said that I thought maybe Etna had something to do with it. But the gliders, they were dumped in the sea. The gliders that should have landed Catania, 60 miles further up the coast, they were dumped in the sea. Now, the story at the time was that the American pilots had ditched them. And yet, two days inland, I met American paratroopers who complained the same things. They'd been dropped in the hills above Evora instead of dropped on the plain of Catania. So everybody couldn't be wrong. There must have been something disturbing compasses, or it's hard to understand. And I still really haven't got it. Why gliders should be ditched? Mine. I mean, the story was that the American pilots turned frightened and as soon as they saw the flak, they just touched the button. The gliders were left adrift. But I mean, they were drifting the sea. They weren't even over land. There was nowhere the gliders could get. And that upset us for a while. I think maybe I should just say that the Gulf of Evora, well, Cisney gets its name from being a three-cornered tricyclum or something they call it, being a three-cornered island. And the east coast is practically straight from north to south, slightly east of north, but with Evora in the south, Augusta sticking out to the west a bit of straight, and then the Catania, big bay of Catania, going in and coming back out again at Messina. The idea really of the gliders and the paratroopers was to take the bridge over Simeto at Plymouth Old Bridge, just south of Catania. And then we were to dash through and join up with them, really, the paratroops and the gliders. It does remind you a little bit of the bridge too far at Arnhem. But we weren't to know anything about this at that particular time.
Could you see much in your boat?
No, not a thing.
Could you hear anything that was going on?
You could hear the waves buffeting the side. You could hear the wind going through the rigging. There's not much rigging, but there is some rigging. Like the wireless mast, and there's a little bit of a boat house at the back of the boat. And you could hear the wind whistling through the rigging. And the buffeting on the side was the main thing.
It was quite a long journey from the mothership to the shore.
Well, it was 712 miles, you see. And
how long did that take you?
I think we got away at 2. We landed at 4:30. So it was 2.5 hours. But I think a lot of that could have been left in the holding back. Man, we were due in at 3:15. But so we're an hour late. And whether that was purely through the sea and the wind, I don't know. But we were due at 3:15, we landed at 4:15.
What condition were you becoming to feel in that boat when it was such a long journey and of quite trying conditions?
Well, I think probably one of the worst part was when we didn't know, of course, but as we approached, she started hitting the bottom. Real cracks, just more or less like a shell burst, but it was actually the bottom touching the And then you do get some apprehension then as to what is happening outside, because you're not sure it's touching the bottom. It could easily be showers flying around outside.
Was there much comment amongst you? As you were,
I think she was fairly silent. I don't remember anything. I think one or two wigs did come and say, what the hell are they doing underneath? Or something like that, or as the divers underneath or what's going on. There's one or two wisecracks, but really speaking, it was fairly silent, and everybody was intent on what was happening once we got down the gangplank and walked inshore. And once we did start to get closer to the shore, the winds and the seas dropped considerably, because, as I explained, the Vola was a gulf. And once you got inside that, Evola is in the southeast corner of the sea, of the island of Sicily, and we were sort of well round the corner, so we had some protection from the wind and sea. If I can go back now onto what actually happened. B Company should have landed, as I explained, at on the north side of Jigamba. In fact, it landed 3,000 yards or 3 kilometres south of Jigamba. In fact, it landed way past the outlet from the river Namaledo. And unfortunately, at this place, I can't remember the name of it now, this village, from the sea it looked a bit like Marina di Vola, and for all we'd seen the silhouettes of Marina di Vola, well, Cotswain taking the B Company in thought that was Marina di Vola, so he pulled in and landed, but I mean he was 3,000 yards away. Worse than that, as they were working their way back to where they should have been, they came across some of the 5th Division. I think it was the East Yorks. No. Anyway, they met a lot of people from the 5th Division who were 7 miles out of position. So it wasn't just the 6th Battalion that was in the wrong place, and the 9th Battalion didn't land where they should have done. So they were well out. And B Company did manage to, they realised fairly sharp that they were in the wrong place. Now, A Company, which should have landed just 1,000 yards south of B Company, they were 5,000 yards away from the where they should have landed. 45 kilometres, it's unbelievable. And they were convinced that they landed in the right place. So they set off going south to find the Mamaledo River. So they were going the wrong way, and they advanced 4 miles. That's quite a shoot up, and they lost 10 men going in the wrong direction. The direction they'd been told to go, but they were too far south. So eventually they got themselves onto the railway and blocked the railway, hoping they might find an armoured train or something coming past, and then they would sort either the train out and take the train and get back to where they should be. C Company landed in exactly the same place. Well, not exactly, but near enough the same place. They had to break the wire to get through and in advance. But they soon realised that they were in the wrong place, and they came back and they actually formed a bit of a line on the banks of the river. The battalion headquarters, they landed in the 9th Battalion's area. They landed actually nearer than anybody. In the LCI, we landed just south of the marina, instead of being north, we're just south. And going down the... on the LCI, there are gangplanks going down from the forecastle down in front of the ship, and they land sort of 20 feet in front of the bow of the ship. Well, we were going down this, and the D Company went down. They were up to their armpits in water with the rifle and the bayonet held above their heads, and everything, and the rest was getting wet. And I was following somewhere down the plank, and the lad in front started laughing. And I couldn't see what to laugh about. I was getting wet. But in another three steps, I knew why the hilarity came. We were hyped up, and unofficially we'd had a good drink. I dropped the grog in the tea, and I suppose a little sweat from fear and apprehension. As we walked down the gangplank, the revolver up above my head and flapping away, as the water came up your thighs, was the most uncanny feeling you can imagine. As it crept up and got down the private parts where you were sweating a little bit, it was just like a prickly heat. It's a sensation I can't really describe. It's just one of those things. I knew why the lad was laughing when he did me, and I suppose everybody's laughing all the way down. It was really quaint. And as we got down the plank, and the water by that time mid-chest, just below my neck, and then my feet touched the shore, the European shore, the first, well, for us it was a European shore anyway. It was actually the Sicilian shore, but to us, we were back in Europe. We had our feet in Europe, for all we were out in the sea. As soon as we got ashore, Major Wood, the company commander of D Company, he altered the advance. And because he had to blow through the wire again, you see, for all we were supposed to be following A and C Company, Major Wood had to get his sappers up and blow the wire so that we could get through. Having got to shore, he found some high land, high ground, climbed up it and sort of set his temporary headquarters there and got the platoons all sorted out and dragged up. And S Company, or those of S Company who were with him, we were sort of tagging along. And from this high ground, he sent out a patrol to try and find A Company, who should have been on the riverbank. Of course, there was nobody there. And they came back and said that there was Germans round the crossroads, which A Company should have taken, and C Company should have passed through and then taken the next crossroad. So Major Wood had to deal with the crossing.
Was there much opposition? Were you being fired at?
Oh, we were fired at, yes. Mainly machine gun and rifle fire. But there's a few mortar bombs dropping as well. But we didn't have much in the way of casualties because it was such a vast place. And I think probably fortunately with A and C Company landing 5,000 yards, you know, three miles away, they had no idea of where the landing was actually taking place because it was covering such a vast place. I mean, they had the gliders on the Catania, the plane of Catania, those that landed, and then all along the east coast, those people landing. So possibly the fact that they were off in their own place, it helped us, that the Italians, they couldn't cope with it in any case. But I don't think their plan really was to cope with it on the beaches. It was to bring the Germans down and shift us off the beaches once we got a small headway. Major Wood, after he'd got the second crossroad secure, he fanned his company out on the riverbank where he was supposed to be. Still left a gap where A Company should have been, but as it happened, it didn't make much difference.
What had you decided to do?
Well, S Company at this time, I suppose with the grey of the light, which was just sort of coming along, or maybe it was just the fact that the distillery had a very high chimney. The distillery in Avola was a very high chimney. And that was one of the points we were looking for, because we knew we had to go past the distillery to get to Jigama. it's in green, for the vehicles. The part of S Company, you see, were actually the crews for the carriers and the anti-tank guns. The carriers went on with one drive and the anti-tank guns likewise, one drive on a portee. So the vehicles, if they went down, there was only one man went with them, one man per vehicle, which was quite a lot, but I mean, there was only one per vehicle. And the rest of the crew were with us in D Company. So we had got to get past the distillery and out onto Jig Green to collect the vehicles. Well, with A Company, D Company, you see, had missed one of their main, the first objective, they missed completely. And they'd taken the second crossroads and then done this thing onto the river bank, which was a security for the formation. But the second one, nobody had gone to, because we'd landed in the wrong place. So Evola is a town built on the, well, in modern terms, I suppose it's American style, it's straight streets, which cross at right angles, and you've got straight streets going either way. And S Company, we set off to get back to where we had to be, past the distillery. And of course, we come across the crossroad, which D Company hadn't encountered. Directly up the road, this is the road from Norta to Evola. At the end of the road was like a town hall, I don't know what they call them, cavalry maybe, in Evola. And they had three or four machine guns up there fighting straight down this main road. And as we came to each crossroad, like the crossing of a block in this road, those people firing across the crossroads. Now, I was at a disadvantage here because while I'd been away with the convoys shipping stuff from Tobruk to Elagala, the rest of the battalion had been doing house-to-house warfare in Benghazi, which I hadn't done. So this took me quite by surprise that to be fired on in a crossroads and houses, no way to get. However, I just watched the lads for a bit, and they were sort of kneeling down beside the wall on one side and some on the wall on the other side. And as they got to the crossroads, they waited for a minute, and then they made a dash across the crossroads, and they just had the bloke in the front to worry about. I soon got the knack of that. But things were getting sticky, because as we got to the distillery, we knew we wanted to go down this other long road, you see. I mean, there was a group of lads that laid themselves down, and they were firing into the cabarinery and sort of holding that machine gun, those machine guns, fairly well. But every crossroads you came to, you see, you were getting like a crossfire coming in both directions. And we knew that we had to turn down a road to the distillery. And we were just sort of wondering what the hell we're going to do about this, because, I mean, S Company, they're not really fighting lads with rifle and bayonet type of thing. They're Bren guns and mortars and anti-tank guns. They're not really the bayonet type of fighters. And we were sort of on a conference in a group just before we did the next jump across the crossroads, and a tank came up behind us. Now that gave us a funny feeling, but he was coming down right down the middle of the road, very wide road, and he was coming right down the middle of the main road, and then he lobbed a few shells into the explosive shells into the cabinetry and quietened that machine gun. So, I mean, we decided then it was one of ours. Up till then, we weren't too sure. Because I have a feeling it was one of the Churchills. I could be wrong, but it was a tank that we weren't really familiar with. And it could have been one of the Churchills. It could even have been one of the assault guns, but I'm almost convinced it was a tank. It was a tank, I'm certain of that. And then he came up alongside us and stood on the crossroads. And he swung his gun round and he shot a few shots down the road, and that keyed us out. But it was a sweaty situation for a while. So we then went down past the distillery and through one or two orange groves and almond groves. Lovely it was once we got out of the village. We never saw a soul. Everybody firing at us, you see, we couldn't see because we were in buildings. There was nobody on the streets. There was steam at the distillery, but nobody to be... I say a distillery, it's an olive oil distillery, I think. It is a distillery, but it's not a whiskey distillery, anything like that. It was an olive oil distillery. And no saw a soul at all the way through. And then we went through the olive groves and down to where the vehicles were coming ashore. Now that caused some panic because the beach brick, seeing a lot of troops coming towards them, they weren't too thrilled at the idea at all. And when they realised who we were and we were waiting in the vehicles, they told us where they're going, known to it, and still they said, get the hell out of it. Well, rather stronger than that. And they showed us a spot about 400 yards inland and where we could get the vehicles and take the bits of tape off and the dewatering equipment. And by 10 o'clock in the morning, we'd landed at 4:30, by 10 o'clock in the morning the carriers were out on patrol. Which isn't a bad morning's work when you think of the hazards that had been out. I mean, nobody landed in just where they should have done. But it wasn't a bad morning's work, really.
Had you any problems getting the vehicles out of the ships and into where you wanted them?
Well, it didn't involve us because, as I said, the brick chased us away from that department. Rightly so, because there was... They couldn't do with too many people hanging around. They got their own problems, and they didn't want a lot of people hanging around watching what they were doing. And they chased us away some 400 yards inland up off the beach. And there we carried out the immediate things which had to be done. And the carriers had their the S Company lads joined their carriers and the anti-tank guns and the mortars, and they went off as sharp as they could. The platoon trucks, they were made runnable, and they went off to join their companies, apart from A Company, which didn't get back until in the afternoon, well in the afternoon, before they realised they were so far out of position. In fact, I believe, the intelligence officer had to go out and find them. It's amazing when you think about that. We were wandering around this countryside, way out of position without any problem. Okay, A Company lost 10 blokes in circumstances beyond their control, in a sense, because they were doing a fight which they had no thought of doing. Calabadbury or something they call the village that they woke up about 4:30 in the morning. Calabernado. And they just went round and woke them up, and the story is that the Italians were running around all the houses to try and get the shore defence people out of bed to man their positions, but they were too late. A Company had taken them, but A Company didn't want to be there. They wanted to be in a bowler. There were quite a few incidents like this that they were laughable.
Was there a full complement of vehicles landed?
I don't know that we had many losses of vehicles at all. I don't think there were many. In fact, I don't think there was much lost at all. Amazing.
What kind of support were you receiving as you landed and for that time just immediately after the landing?
Well, I said about the tank. Where he came from, I don't know, but 45th Royal Tank Regiment were attached to us for the attack, and the 98th Field Artillery, which were their assault guns, were attached to us. The tank must have come off, I suppose, at Gigamba and then worked his way down to help, or was going to help A Company. Heavy artillery, I don't think we used any. I don't think the ships used any, not in the first 2 days or so. It was all machine. The enemy fire was all machine gun, a few mortar shells, not a lot of mortar shells, and frankly, the defences weren't there. I mean, they were awkward in Evola, where we're in this situation of on a crossroads, and they had well-appointed machine guns, well-placed machine guns, because they were firing from buildings in the sort of four storeys up and firing the full length of the road, which made it that you couldn't hide behind the walls very long. If you stayed too long, you were a target, so you had to keep moving. But obviously when he came to the crossroads, you had to sort of get across them sharp. Then there was a little bit of a hold-up. But the defences were amazingly... I think everybody was surprised how easy the landing had gone, apart from the directional problem. Of course, those glider parts in the sea, they would think of a different thing altogether. I don't know how many glider parts were lost, but they must have been considerable. Glider troops, not pilots, not just pilots, but glider troops.
Did you have any air support?
The air support... again, we didn't see any. On the other hand, it wasn't until much later that we had any enemy air problems. Because if I can go on a bit now, when I came back to Evola, to the hospital ship, I do remember that it was still packed with shipping then. I believe on that occasion that, yes, there were some bombs dropped while I was waiting to be loaded onto the hospital ship. There were some bombs dropped that day. But we had a problem, really, that we wanted to be in the Catanian plain, because at Evola, the shore is some 8 miles from the hills. And it's a very hilly place, Sicily. And the only really good flat place is around on the east coast, is around Catania, where it goes inland about 30 miles. And then there were one or two airfields that could be used. But of course, there was nothing. I think there was a small place against Syracuse, which was taken the first day, where they could have got some planes. But I suppose the planes were coming from Malta. And, you know, it's some... I don't know. I suppose we're talking 300 miles, really, which is about the life of a fighting plane, isn't it? 300 miles out and 600 miles. It wouldn't leave you much room for fighting.
You said you hadn't many losses. Were there any losses to the battalion?
Yes, A Company lost 10. C Company, Captain Walton, he just got to the fence, just to the wire, and he was shot dead. He didn't actually get it. Well, he was ashore, and he got to the wire, and he was waiting for the REs to blow the gap when he was shot. I don't recall a lot of other losses. There was one or two hurt in various ways, but I don't think there was many actually killed. And I think the vehicles came ashore very well, really, for considering that they'd done 960 miles from, nearly 1,000 miles from Cabrit, or Suez, where they were loaded.